Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 749. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamito. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
It has been a busy evening between a car breakdown, essentially, dinner out with a friend, and now the podcast, along with a busy ass day at the office. It's definitely been a day that's gone by quite quickly here. there have been a lot of days that have gone by that both of us have watched Randall Keith Orton wrestle on our television. The fact that he predates Stunt Granny by 6 years is impressive, since we are coming up on our 14th year here. 20 years of Randy Orton is... We started off on the site, like, he was definitely one of those guys that was an easy make fun of, because he was still doing dumb stuff at that time period.
Yeah. His growth and maturity process took quite the long time.
Yeah. But at this point, too, like, I do kind of recognize that I'm like, man, that is all... You know, it's kind of like the, in a lot of ways, forgetting about Triple H and how much I hated his bigfooting at times. Within his time in the WWE. Orton has been such a staple, especially, I mean, he's been one of the pandemic, he was one of the pandemic MVPs, I felt like, and what else was he, and I mean, he's kind of kept the momentum going since, you know, like, I mean, he's had like 3 years where he's just kind of been on again. And it's been kind of wild.
Yeah, it has. And you know what? It is the full maturity of Randy Orton. He said in this promo, and I completely believe him. He is just having fun right now. He is enjoying it more than he ever has. And you know, it's not the first person late in their career who's just hit that. I mean, for. In many ways, you know, they can be on autopilot as far as just knowing where to be and when to do everything. Randy Orton has definitely been accused of that many times in his career of being on autopilot. But this run, since the pandemic, has been a lot of fun for Randy. Fun watching. He combines the element of knowing what to do and when to do it with just a boyish enthusiasm, I guess you could call it, for what he's been doing lately, and it's a lot of fun to watch. It's you know, the evolution of Randy Orton has been an amazing thing to watch. Once again, one of those guys that came into his own the entirety of my adult life. I graduated high school in 2001, turned 18 the same year. He came around in 2002.
You like to make me feel old. So, he would have come around, it was 3 years after college graduation. But that's still, that's kind of still fairly early in my re-fandom, I suppose, of the WWE. You know, that's a while. That's a long time ago. I was with my ex-wife when this happened.
It's wild to think how long ago these things that happened in the 2000s are now. It really is. And I don't, maybe it's because our generation is on Twitter, on Facebook. We see all these, what they are is their hyper-engagement, you know, site, you know, pages. that just go, 20 years ago this happened, 15 years ago that happened. You know, we are inundated with this kind of stuff in a way that previous generations, before the internet, certainly before social media, were not. I don't know if our parents' generation was sitting in the 80s or the 90s and thinking about how long ago the 70s was, and having it just put in their face, like, this happened after I graduated from high school, but it's 20 years ago, graduating from this, college, this is 25 years ago, what have you. It's just like, it's something unique to the online culture, I think, that's developed over the last, say, maybe about 15 years ago, if you want to take it back to the beginnings of MySpace and Facebook. That's all matured.
That seems like a pretty reasonable time period to put it in, because I mean that was also the time period where internet usage just got easier.
Yes.
And you could inundate people with this type of information. And Randy Orton at 20 years. I really wasn't surprised in any way with the outpouring of love for Randy Orton.
Within the industry, he is the guy everyone wants to wrestle. Yes, his reputation amongst the boys greatly dwarfs has always seemed to greatly dwarf his reputation with the fans.
Oh, yeah, which is kind of impressive. I mean, I would think the majority of people are on board with Randy these days?
These days, yes. These days, Randy has hit that comfortable, legendary status. And once again, he's still putting out good performances. And once again, in a ways, he seems genuinely happy with his life. In a way that he wasn't. We know 10, 15 years ago, if Randy Orton walked out with a Scott... A lot of times, Randy Orton walked out with a scowl on his face or looking like he had a chip on his shoulder. He really did have a chip on his shoulder. He really was angry about something. But not this Randy, not dad Randy, not veteran, 20-year veteran Randy, not legend.
He's not legend killer anymore, really.
No, not really.
He is the legend to kill at this point.
Yeah, I guess that's the direction they can go at some point.
And I guess it is just impressive to just the few amount of people, honestly, in wrestling that make it that long, or are on a major stage like he was. Steve Austin was obviously in... I feel like he was in wrestling itself for more than 20 years. But he had such...
Nope.
I guess maybe John Cena is the closest?
They debuted around the same time. Cena, Randy, Batista, and Brock all debuted in 2002. After spending about a couple of years in OVW at the time. I mean they are four contemporaries of each other. They came around at the exact same time.
But I guess I was just thinking about so many careers are just short or they jumped around, and Orton's been in one place. It's been amazing. Like, he's had some bad patches, obviously. I mean, how can't you in 20 years? But for the most part, that guy has done a pretty good job of keeping his character fresh. And he hasn't even deviated that much from his formula. Like, I guess it's one of those things that... Like, Big Show had to flip entirely too often. Like, between babyface and heel. Orton's kind of gotten relatively long runs as one or the other. And I think that that's kind of helped him in his career.
Yeah, I would say, though, I mean, he's turned multiple times, but never anything like that. Never did feel like it was happening at, you know, twice a year. He's been a... Maybe the last few years have been a little more unstable in that regard. But not much. Yeah, Randy's been pretty solidly babyface. For going on a couple of years now, I guess, or a year and a half, maybe. Obviously that stuff with Bray Wyatt, where he set a guy on fire. not exactly babyface of the year material.
I know that we definitely made fun of that on this year's show at some juncture.
Oh yes, we definitely did. But the stuff with Riddle, and I've stated my issues with Riddle on many occasions. But Riddle definitely benefits from being Randy's partner. I mean, that's not even that's not even debatable.
He's made his character less dumb.
He's tolerable with Randy Orton.
Yeah.
I'm still thinking that, and I'm still hoping that when they go through with this breakup, do the little bit of the swerve, have Riddle turn heel.
Yeah, yeah, that would him, like, at some point, Riddle still needs to get out of this character, I think. You know, just the way that him and Orton interact, like, it's one of those... The WWE loves the odd couple stuff. Just loves it. And, yeah, they actually do a good job of being an odd couple.
Yeah, they do.
Like, just genuinely... So, I do think that helps quite, it's helped both parties. It's kept Orton fresh in something new, and Riddle, it has certainly done some image rehab, because he was not presented well when he first came to the main roster. You know, regardless of...
We don't need to go into it again, but came in with a lot of controversy, and then they so over, which they would have done this regardless of anything else, causing, Riddle to be unlikable. They overplayed the stoner hand to an obnoxious degree.
Oh, yes.
And it really did take Randy Orton, this teaming Randy Orton, to get him and anyway on track.
Yeah, I mean, that is the type of pool that Randy Orton has. To be able to change someone's perception that well at this point in his career. It's, it's pretty impressive, to say the least. Oh, man. I don't know. Is there anything else to say about the RKO man himself?
No, nothing too much more to say about Randy. I mean, I'm sure we'll have multiple volumes of shows still to come that will feature the Viper.
Because I guess I didn't even check. Like, he can't be older than me, I wouldn't think.
I think he's 41 or 40.
Yeah, I mean, he's still got some years then, if he's in his early 40s.
Yes, he does.
So, 42, yeah. I mean, yeah, he looks great. however long he can keep on going, it'll be interesting. Other big things. Oh, Asuka returns to WWE TV. That was a big thing. Also on Raw.
that was definitely a big part of Monday Night Raw. Coming back to to essentially start a feud with Becky Lynch. I mean, a non-title women's feuds are forming. Hallelujah. it can be done. They've wrestled each other before. They have like two Royal Rumbles consecutively against each other. It's not anything completely new, but with Becky's persona as it is, Asuka does not seem to have any change in character at all. But with Becky's persona, you could do some stuff with it. Surprising that they're having them both, that they're having Asuka come back to feud with Becky in a way, because after Bianca, beat Sonya pretty decisively, overcoming all that bullshit. I don't know who Bianca's next opponent is going to be.
Oh yeah, because it's at least a pay per view for Becky and Asuka.
Asuka, yeah. I guess it'll be.
I was watching the highlights here at the end of NXT 2.0 and just completely had a mind fart there. That's one of the more interesting things about that. That matchup, it's like you can kind of understand that Becky needs a win back. Also, it will be really strange if Asuka comes back and ends up losing right off the hop.
That is an interesting conundrum, yes. But Becky can certainly survive a loss. I don't think that one more loss is gonna completely kill her.
She's in a pretty good spot at this point. She is as over as anyone can be. So I did kind of chuckle at her almost overplaying the depression card. about the whole situation. Like it was kind of funny. Like her and Seth have very big performances. I will maybe term it that way.
It was a little overdone. I wasn't the biggest fan of it.
Oh yeah. I think you kind of mentioned it first, which was, yeah, the WWE, as much as I feel like they have mistreated Asuka at times, you still know that they respect her more than some of the other women that have been called up. And I mean, I guess I shouldn't even be saying called up. But yeah, I guess that really is the right word, honestly. You know, so many people have not really cut it on the main roster, and Asuka has been able to stick around and gotten some main event features. It will be interesting to see if she does ever change her character. Like, that's something I didn't think about until you brought it up either. I'm like, yep, it's the same Asuka, even the same catchphrase. It's good to have someone of her caliber back because you, for the most part, the WWE has kept her on TV and kept her at least in a secondary feud. And the women's roster desperately needs other names and faces back. Is the Lacey Evans "My Life Really Stunk" story grabbing you at all?
It's causing me to grab the remote. it's awful, and now she's trying to frame her story as something every child should go through this or something like this, or what is she trying to say? Like, that's a horrible lesson. That it's a horrible value. That's a horrible everything. God, she's going to be.
No, I'm with you. Like, that was the one part of her promo that and I'm trying to find the right word for it, because normally I'd say jazzed up, but it doesn't seem like the right word to use for her story. But it's been presented so, it just feels kind of plain. You know what I mean? Maybe it's just because it's a visual medium and we're really just getting her talking about the story. I don't know if it feels like there should be someone interviewing her to get this stuff out of her to make the setting feel a little bit better to me. And maybe that's what it is. The presentation just seems weird to me. Because she's also in... Like, is she in her new wrestling gear? Is she doing these promos?
Yeah.
It's just like, and I guess that's the other thing that feels weird to me. Like, if you're telling that type of story, I kind of want you in, like, maybe what you would wear at home or whatever. Like, I want you to have a different look than wrestling gear. Like, it just feels like you're... should be cutting a promo, not talking about your life. And yeah, pretty much saying everyone should go through something this shitty. It's just like, no. I don't want anyone to go through those types of things. Like, I understand that it has helped make you personally a better person. But there are a lot of people in that situation that it makes them a bad person. So, no, not a good plan, Lacey. I can, just shut that one down. You can, grow up, and learn lessons and still be from a loving household.
I have a sneaking suspicion this isn't going to work, and she is going to be booed vociferously upon her return.
I will be interested to see how effective it is. I'm with you. Like, I don't think it's not really working for me, just because the presentation has been, to me, awkward. So, yeah, I don't know if she's going to get booed out of the building necessarily. I don't think they're going to get the reaction that they're looking for. And I don't know what else is left for Lacey Evans for pulling out as far as, like, gimmick cards go. Because if real life doesn't work as a good gimmick... I don't know what else they do, since they already kind of did that weird pinup doll situation previously.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how she ends up faring in the long run. I'm trying to think if there's... Oh, yeah, there really isn't much more to say about Bianca beating... Sonya Deville Is there?
Not really.
Yeah, it was this one of the few times Babyface gets the win in the hometown. I would have been beyond shocked if Sonya Deville had won the championship.
No, that was not going to happen. She was not in any way. I mean, they did the old trick of you're starting the match multiple times with a new stipulation and all that, and using copious amounts of interference that Bianca, you know, overcame all of it. But never once was Sonya Deville ever presented as someone who could win that title.
Yeah. And, yeah. Just, I guess at this point, I guess I don't understand why they have done anything with Sonya Deville. Like, it's weird to tease this much in-ring coming back and not have a real coming back. And she actually has a legitimate match, but it's still, like, one of those matches where she has a workaround because of the stipulation changing. It's, yeah. The WWE and their women sometimes and the decisions that go on are quite baffling. You know, if they think she's good enough to talk and she's at least half decent in the ring, you kind of need her on your women's roster, guys. They do not need Adam Pearce on the men's roster. He is completely okay where he is currently.
No, yeah, Pierce is fine, and there has to be an end game to this whole Sonya abusing her power thing. I mean, there is no reason that she should keep her management job after what she tried to pull on Monday. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, at least it was acknowledged that they knew that Sonya was going overboard last week when Adam Pearce only fined Bianca $1 for half-heartedly throwing her down. But yeah, I guess I don't feel like something's coming because I feel like something's been coming for a while now and they just haven't pulled the trigger on it. Like, but I don't know what you do. Like, why is Sonya Deville in this much of a story in a lot of ways? Like, it doesn't seem like there's any good to come of it unless you are just adding her back to the women's roster.
Yeah, no, it was just something to do. I mean, the stuff with Sonya and Naomi went on forever and barely had an ending to speak of.
Yeah.
You know, Ronda treated Sonya like a jobber, and then Bianca borderline treated her like a jobber. There's just... I don't know where you go with her. Especially in a world where there's a very good chance that in a couple of weeks, the two women's champions are going to be Bianca and Ronda. And she's not a viable contender to either of those titles, I guess, unless you put her in a tag team.
Oh, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville back together again.
That'd be fine, I guess.
Toxic attraction gets blown up. Oh, man. Yeah, I was trying to think if there is anything else in the women's department to cover, but I think that's honestly about it. Yeah, kind of ran through most of SmackDown here, and nothing else was on there, and those were the only stories on Raw. Anything else stick out to you on WWE television this week that we have not gotten to yet?
I guess we could really just hit up the overall quality of Monday Night Raw. We've been saying it, but last night felt like the culmination of the improvements of Monday Night Raw, just of a very, very good wrestling television show.
Yeah, I will admit that it didn't seem to feel like 3 hours.
No, it flowed incredibly well. It moved fast. But fast, certainly a lot faster than Raw usually does. Even in other good weeks. This really felt like, simply put, they had enough to fill a 3-hour show.
And keep it moving. We got another Veer Mahan squash match. Honestly, the Bobby Lashley versus Omos arm wrestling match, I guess one of the better segments. Like, I remember watching that going, this is one of the better arm wrestling segments.
Yeah, no, it was fine. It was well done in that respect.
My expectations are not high for arm wrestling matches, I suppose.
No. And for good reason. But no, they did this well. I have a little reservations on almost losing something like that, because size and strength is really all he has. but he made up for it with the post-match meeting.
Yeah, he's always going to have MVP to help him out here, I think, moving forward.
Yeah.
To get some level of heat. And, yeah. I guess that decision, I still think it's a little awkward that Bobby Lashley is supposed to be a babyface out of the blue, essentially. But they're definitely moving that direction, and they're positioning him in that direction. Omos getting to do the cheap things with MVP, I think, is far more useful than MVP continuing with Bobby Lashley, who, again, during the pandemic period here, has definitely gotten... kind of the MVP treatment during this time period. He's been one of those good players during the pandemic period here. MVP is not needed by him at this point. What else happened? Oh. And I don't know how much we talked about about the wedding last week. I do think that we mentioned how great R-Truth is. Reggie and Dana Brooke versus Akira Tozawa and Tamina. Entertaining for what it was.
Yes, definitely entertaining, these 24/7 characters are being very well casted right now. R-Truth is hilarious. I hope every week they give him a new certificate in something ridiculous. that they need to keep doing.
Oh man, yeah. Good for R-Truth for keeping the fun moving along. Finn Balor versus Damian Priest was a solid matchup with at this point I would say an expected finish. Finn Balor definitely finds himself in not the best spot. these days.
No, Finn Balor is definitely not in favor right now with WWE management. You can certainly say that. He was definitely put in the position to just do, after losing the U.S. title last week, clean as a whistle, and this week it was fairly dominant performance by Priest. Some people were saying that there were elements in the commentary and throughout the match itself that maybe indicated that Finn is going to join Edge and Priest. I didn't really get any of that, but maybe that would be for the best too. Who knows?
Yeah, I was one of those persons. They kept on talking, especially Corey Graves, was talking about the mindset of Finn Balor and how it just hasn't been right. And if it doesn't, to me, if that doesn't mean necessarily that he's joining them, but to me, it definitely hints at him getting some type of character refresh, which he kind of needs at this point. You know, I've liked Finn Balor a lot. He needs some type of new dimension to his character if he wants to keep on moving along, I think, within the WWE. Size is always going to be a problem for him, though. You know, it's just one of those kind of fact of life things in the WWE these days. And most days, honestly. The Miz gave away his own involvement in his match by wearing ring gear to his own TV show. Still entertaining segment. It gave Theory something to work with. I think I was talking about how he didn't have any character fleshing out. Not that he had some long speech on Miz TV. It's something, though. You know, you need to have a starting point and establishing him, at least nominally in people's minds, as a mini Miz. It's a good thing.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's, you know, there are definitely similarities, and you should certainly play them up. I don't know if I'll ever be sold on Theory, but they're going to go all the way with it, though. All the way to, I guess, possibly a feud with John Cena this summer. We'll see if that happens. There's definitely similarities between the two. They played well off each other. Once again, Miz just being that ultimate utility player.
Yeah, that guy can work up and down the roster. And that was another one. Definitely a little bit of a surprise to me. I felt like I knew at some point that Asuka would be back. A little bit shocked to see Mustafa Ali on my TV again. Were you similarly shocked?
In that segment, kind of, but the word had leaked out earlier.
Oh.
That he was on his way back to TV.
Yeah, I guess I kind of caught that from the Twitterverse there as I was watching Raw. Since I did not see that news, it was a complete surprise to me. And, because I'm trying to remember, he didn't, did he get, yeah, he got a cheapy roll-up win, did he not?
Yeah, he got to beat The Miz while Theory got to, you know, refuse the title defense and walk away. So a Theory versus Ali match is upcoming. Interesting, because you feel like Ali should get a win on the way on his way back, but I don't see Theory losing anytime soon either. So I guess there will be at least, even though we got to get it win over the Miz, there will be some putting of Mr. Ali in his place creatively.
Yeah. They definitely did. The Miz loves having the insider baseball promo/ WWE message sender promo, however you really want to term it. It's always kind of funny when the Miz gets to deliver that type of promo.
He's good. He's the right guy.
So what else happened on Raw here? Rhea Ripley was on there. Kevin Owens and Chad Gable arguing is entertaining. And I mean, we did end up with the 8-man tag to end the night, which was itself entertaining. Randy Orton, Riddle, Cody Rhodes, and Ezekiel taking on the Usos, Kevin Owens, and Seth Rollins. Is there any believable scenario in which case people will at least somewhat forget Elias, or is this gimmick going to be an ongoing thing?
I'm pretty sure this gimmick's going to be an ongoing thing. I don't know necessarily see them. I don't know if they'll ever escape the shadow of Elias. That's one of the things about this. I don't know exactly where, after the initial humor, I'm not sure exactly where they can go with this. And, you know, Ezekiel/Elias's issue always was, he was nothing special when the bell rang. And I don't know if necessarily that anything's changed in that regard.
It's hard to say how big he was considering the clothing that he wore during his matches. Tended to be baggy and whatnot. He does seem to be having a little different of in-ring action than he did as Elias. I'm not sure that it's any more sports entertaining to me, though. We shall see, though. This is pretty early on. Maybe he'll have something else up his sleeve in the future here. Anything else from the WWE that you'd want to hit there? Mostly from SmackDown, I suppose.
Well, week two without Roman Reigns appearing in front of the live crowd, he was backstage. Once again, a not particularly exciting episode of SmackDown.
I was just moving through it here, and there is not a whole lot to sink your teeth into. Drew McIntyre versus Sami Zayn in a lumberjack match is the main event, and there were lots of shenanigans in that.
Oh yes, the lumberjack match basically ended on a count out.
Yep. So, SmackDown just is what it is. And that's fine, because I was going to bring up, what did you think of Jade Cargill versus Marina Shafir?
It was a fine match, and you know, and definitely showing that that Jade Cargill is definitely improving, because Marina Shafir is not carrying matches. You know, they built up Marina okay for this, but once again, you know, I don't know if she's Marina's necessarily shown anything in particular herself, so it's fine that it was just in the end another win for Jade Cargill.
Jade Cargill is just in a weird spot at this point where they're building up opponents just for her, and it does not involve the main championship people for the most part.
No, it doesn't. It shouldn't. She should be, you know, kept away from that. Kept, you know, still allowed to simmer. You know, but before putting her in the main title mix eventually. I think you do that eventually. Do that, and you do that without having her lose the TBS championship first. I think you have her. You do a champion versus champion situation there, although of course obviously WWE has overloaded us on champion versus champion scenarios over the years, but for AEW it would be it's a little more unique, I guess. I mean it's better than the alternative of having Jade go in to her for her women's world championship title match with a loss on her record, since we're playing up the undefeated streak so much.
I suppose you can always get out from that if you want to with a some type of triple threat loss or a multi-woman match loss if you want to go with that.
That option's always open. It's cheap, but it gets you where you want to go, and there's usually not any long-term damage to doing it.
And I mean, I guess that was the big one as far as Rampage went that I wanted to cover. Did any of the other matches catch your attention on there?
I actually did not see much else from Rampage. I came in late. I was using my Sling TV DVR, which somehow lost the first half an hour. First time trying to use that.
Yeah, well, it's there wasn't anything too crazy there. When you have four matches within an hour time frame, there's only so many. You can only do so much in matches. That pretty much leaves you one segment per match. And not everyone just got one segment. Poor Serpentico just got an ass kicking from Lance Archer, which it should have been, but... Okay, anything else from over the weekend news-worthy that's worth covering? I feel like... nothing is jumping off the page at me currently.
Yeah, nothing's really jumping off the page. It's been a quiet post WrestleMania news cycle, which can be a good thing because usually the post WrestleMania news cycle involves releases.
I guess I just don't think at this point that the WWE can do that.
No. You have to work with the roster you have, and you know, bring people in up from NXT as they're ready, and as you have, you know, ideas for them.
Yeah.
WWE, I mean, we've seen it multiple. We see the state of SmackDown currently. We all watch the Royal Rumble. You know, we watch these situations where these all hands on deck type situations where, you know, it's a battle royal, or it's one of these segments where all the wrestlers have to surround the ring like they did last night, and it just you start to see the cracks in the roster when everybody's out there.
Yeah, when there's two people on each side of the ring for a lumberjack match, it starts to look a little bit rough, especially since you don't include main eventers. So, it's a pretty interesting time period for the WWE here. So, Bell Time Beer of the Show, Sideswipe Brewing, El Ocho, Mole Brown Ale. This was for their one of their 8th anniversary beers. Sideswipe, one of my favorite Columbus breweries. I'm not sure how far their distribution circle goes, so come here to get their beer. Yes, it's that good. So that's what I will say. I'm not sure if this one's definitely in the top half of the bracket as far as quality goes. Definitely not my favorite one from theirs, but it does have a nice chocolatey flavor to it. And I like brown ales because they're not hoppy at all. It just gives you a nice malt vibe. So a little bit of chocolate with that is a different look than most chocolatey beers, which are usually stouts, which are a little bit have a little more bitterness from the roasted malt there. That is the hashtag Belltime Beer of this here podcast from @DeFrango11. That is @StuntCali. The brand is @StuntGranny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.